둘, 셋, 파!
Borahe Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 80.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network. Consequence Podcast Network.
Welcome to In Defense of Ska. We aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of the music. Ska deserves the respect genres like punk, hip-hop, and hardcore find amongst their listeners. Our host is veteran ska musician Adam Davis of the bands Link 80 and Omnigon.
Hugh Lincoln headlined the 930 Club in Washington, D.C. on November 21st to celebrate the release of their new album, No Normal, on Bad Time Records. No one will be dancing harder at this show than Drew Skibitzky. Drew is the hype man of Kill Lincoln, adding energetic crowd participation to their performance. This week, we speak with Drew, fresh off their tour with Less Than Jake, to explore his role in the band and to discuss his favorite version of ska, live ska. And now joining me is my co-host, renowned music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska, Aaron Carnes.
Yeah, we were just both at that Kill Lincoln show in Sacramento.
Yeah.
Where they opened for Less Than Jake. Yeah, they were killer.
They were great. And I just saw them again at Fest on the Heartwood stage. Drew was in top form. He kicked so high at one point that he wound up like kicking above his head and then threw himself flat onto his back as a result. And then got up and kept dancing. It was insane.
Now this show, they play Ace of Spades. That's a venue, a bigger venue, because Less Than Jake were headlining.
Mm-hmm.
That has kind of a barrier between the audience and the stage, which I feel like Kill Lincoln kind of came up in an era where they took advantage of there being no barrier at these small shows. That's where you have Drew is on stage, off stage, kind of just all around. Ume's all around too. But I feel like they had to kind of be a little more strategic at this show.
Yeah. I mean, he does a pretty good job of navigating that barrier. Like I saw him, you know, drop down off the stage. There's a step at the back of the barrier, gets onto that, and then jumps over the barrier.
Mm-hmm.
Like one fluid motion, no problem.
So the very first Omnigon show,
yeah,
was with Kill Lincoln, huh?
Yeah. The first time I ever got to see Kill Lincoln, we were playing together, was the very first Omnigon show at Gilman Street. And Drew was there doing the hype man thing. And you know something I noticed at that show, Aaron?
What?
You and Drew dress pretty similar.
Oh, do we?
Yeah. T-shirt, usually not a black t-shirt,
mm-hmm.
And shorts.
Wow.
And running shoes, or like athletic shoes.
This is like the hype man outfit then.
Yeah, I'm wondering, are you secretly a hype man, Aaron?
We haven't really talked about this much. I am in a band, a different band.
Oh.
And I'm the hype man of that band.
Oh, wow. I can't wait till that gets revealed.
Yeah, I will. If you sign up to the Patreon, I will reveal the name of this band. So every member of Kill Lincoln gives 110% on stage at every show. And Drew helps motivate the audience to match that energy.
I wanted to start us off by kind of just talking about the role of the hype man I think like the biggest comparison that gets drawn to you is like Ben Carr of the Boss Tones, but Hype Men have been a big part of music for a while. Flavor Flav from Public Enemy, Bo from Avail. How do you feel about the role of a hype man?
So most of my outlook on music and what I've learned has really been from performances I've seen and bands I've seen live. So I really haven't seen a ton of bands with hype men live. I've seen the Boss Tones only a couple times. Like my first show was that my first club show I went to was in 2003, you know, which was kind of time when the Boss Tones were winding down. So I never really got to see a ton of bands. I never saw the Boss Tones a ton back then or later on even. What I mean by saying all that is I don't know much about the history of hype men. I listen to, you know, some hip hop here and there. I listen to the Boss Tones, of course. I love the Boss Tones on the records. I've, you know, heard people, like when we did that UK tour with Kill Lincoln, so many people brought up Baz from the Happy Mondays, but you know, the Happy Mondays never played near me growing up, but that wasn't part of my scene. So I don't know anything about that.
Yeah.
So I really, that's not something I can really answer and speak to in well-versed. One thing I do think about though, in terms of ska, is I do understand that there is some sort of tradition within ska for hype men, or hype people. And you think back to, you know, Jamaica and the dance halls promoting themselves and trying to draw crowds, right? And these rival DJs. Well, you think about a club now, who's out there getting people into them?
Yeah.
Right? It's the hype people, right? You have hype men. You have, you know, people who are basically marketing your event. So maybe, I don't know where it stems from. I don't know the history. You know, you guys are more archaeologists of the genre than I am. So I would hope that you might be able to speak to it and educate me. I can only really tell you about my experience more so in expertise.
Well, one thing I noticed is that people often bring up Ben Carr, like Adam Singh, but Ben Carr feels a little more passive than you. Like you're like engaging with people. He's just kind of up there dancing. But I feel like you are like a lot of times aren't even on stage. You're just like with the people, just getting the people going.
You know, I've been with doing my role in Kill Lincoln for, 14, 15 years. Ben Carr, when I see Ben Carr on, you know, at shows, he's in front of 2,000 to 3,000 people on a big stage. You know, that's a rarity for Kill Lincoln. That's a really odd night in my world. For, you know, 90% of my career as a hype man, you know, we were playing to rooms where there were, you know, between 5 to 50 people, some, you know, in a lot of those cases, especially on the road. So it's kind of, you know, performing on a stage in front of people really was never part of it when I had my role. It was more just to make sure the crowd had a good time. The role has definitely evolved over time. At first, you know, I just wanted to have fun and they invited me on tour. Then, you know, after doing that, you realize, oh, hey, I can, you know, cause I go to enough shows. We all go to enough shows. We've seen those shows where there might be 20 or 30 people or 5 or 50 even, and they're into the music. They want to take it to the next level. They want to dance, but they don't for whatever reason. Right. And that goes a long way towards everyone's experience. The band, the crowd, the club, that goes so far. When you have a set and the audience is not only into it, but they're also engaging with it, right? Whether they're closer to the front of the stage or they're running around in a circle or they're dancing. Whatever they're doing that's engaging is making it more fun for everybody, including the band. So that's what I kind of wanted to focus on when I realized, oh, hey, I kind of have a role with this. I just wanted to make sure that everybody at our shows had a good time and they got into it to whatever degree they wanted to and they felt comfortable doing so. All too often, you go to a show, I see it all the time, and I see it like on this Less Than Jake tour we just finished, right? So we go out to these shows. It's Title Holder, Kill Lincoln, Less Than Jake. And one of the things I try and do in a setting like that is read the room. I got to know kind of what the audience is like. And a lot of these crowds, especially the first band, people are, you can tell. You go out there and you see people bobbing their head. You see people kind of jumping in place a little bit. And they're not sure what to do. They don't know how to start a pit. And you can see that they want it. All it takes is that one person to be like, hey, it's okay to act a little silly. It's okay to do, you know, people are afraid to, I think, in my opinion, I think people are afraid to look stupid in front of others. They're afraid to be embarrassed. They're afraid that they're going to do something the wrong way. And when you have somebody that's kind of giving you that permission to be a little silly and to not care about that, it goes so far in terms of being contagious in the crowd and having that energy, you know, continue through the set into the band's performance and, you know, everyone's memory. Mm-hmm.
So on a tour like you just did with Less Than Jake, like you're playing bigger rooms, which you already said is not really where your comfort lies. How do you determine, you, Drew, how do you determine whether a show is going to be easy to turn things up at or when there's going to be pushback?
Well, I didn't say it's not where my comfort lies. I'm always comfortable.
Okay.
I'm always comfortable. I mean, when we're doing our thing, we have the time of our lives and we really know what we're doing. So whether it's a big crowd or, you know, whether the crowd, the show we did before the Less Than Jake tour was Salty's Beach Bar in New Jersey, right? That was for probably, you know, 70 people in a room, right? Very different experience. What I meant was the frequency of those shows, right? That's the Salty's experience is a lot for like a headliner gig is a lot more common for us, right? So yeah, what am I going to do every night? Yeah, that's what I wake up wondering too. Yeah. Even these Less Than Jake gigs, some of them, like we played this one in Santa Cruz and the stage is like 10 feet in the air.
The catalyst.
Yeah, there's a barrier. There's like no space because there's two drum sets on there. So it's, and sometimes I'm like, I got to be out in the crowd more. Just because where am I going to go? And at the end of the day, what I always try and, you know, kind of put at the forefront of whatever I'm going to do is how is everybody going to have a good time, right? How is the band going to have a good time? How is the crowd going to have a good time? Me having a good time, I'm going to have a good time no matter what. I love this music. I love being at a good show. I'm going to have a good time no matter what. So what am I going to do? Well, that's whatever is going to make the best experience for everybody, including, you know, again, the band, the crowd, and the club. This like Salty's, that show that we did, there was no stage. So I'm just dancing, you know, kind of in front of the stage, trying to get people to kind of be comfortable running around and having some fun. And they were great. That was a great crowd. It's always fun. It's very rare that I have a bad time. You know, it's you guys have seen Kill Lincoln. You know what the music's like. It's high energy. It's fast. It encourages a lot of sing-alongs, a lot of rambunctious behavior. It's a good time.
Specifically, I think I was thinking about the Sacramento show. Like there was a fight that broke out at the end of a Less Than Jake set. The vibe felt a little more, it felt like there was a little bit more pushback, from maybe the security and the audience as far as like really letting go. And I was trying to speak to kind of those experiences.
Yes. That was a really interesting one. The previous show we played in Sacramento was at Colonial Cafe, right? That was a lot of fun. It was kind of, that was more of like a vibe of like a normal Kill Lincoln show, right?
Yeah.
Sacramento, it's a big club. There's a barrier. It's a lot of people on that tour. You know, I do these interviews before the shows and I try and like ask people questions. And even during and after, I try and ask people these questions. You see in the New Tone documentary, and I try and kind of make a habit of it. And one of the things I ask people is about their show going habits. And a lot of those people, they had said they hadn't seen Less Than Jake in 20 years, some of them. Like some of these people, there was a significant amount of them who really, and I think, you know, talking to the crowd, you could see that, right? So what you had in Sacramento, I think, is a mix of some people who really, they're not really going to a lot of shows. You had some people who are going to a ton of them, who are friends with the band that's on stage, who are trying to get it going. It's a Monday night, right? So typically that's, you know, a tougher night in general. People are already, some of them are, you know, they might even be annoyed that they went out in the first place. They might be annoyed that they're sitting through the opening band still, right? Mm-hmm. There's people that stand in front of the barrier and they endure Kill Lincoln just so that they can be there for less than Jake, right? And that's fine. That's great. So in Sacramento, and with this tour in general, this is the first time that we've been on a big tour like this, playing 45 minute sets on big stages. So there's a lot of learning I'm always doing, and there's a lot I learned on this run. One of the things that I think is important is giving the crowd a chance to have fun for themselves. So at the start of the set, I don't want to just jump in there and like tell people what to do, right? I'm going to their scene. I am a visitor in their community for that night. So you guys have a scene where you are in Northern California. I have a scene where I am in Baltimore. I grew up in one in New Jersey. You know the people who are going to be there. You know the way the shows go. And I wanted to give people that chance to you know, do what they're going to do. However, you know, after we, you know, get through a bunch of songs, and if nothing's really happening, or I think that I can do something to help the room, I'll get out there and do it. But that also gives me some time to kind of observe the room and see what's going on, right? Like you said, those guys were fighting, right? If I see two guys that are like kind of getting into it or something like that, or someone who like, so here's a situation. A lot of times people will be sitting there just like on their phone, on their barrier, right? Or, and they'll be like annoyed that people around them are pushing them, right? Because you might be on the barrier on your phone trying to get through Kill Lincoln, and the people around you are like pushing up to the stage and moshing behind you, and there's a crowd, and you're just annoyed by the whole thing, right? But if I see that, you know, that's something to be aware of, right? By the same, you know, the other side of the coin is you see the kid that's, you know, kind of just really trying to get it going, but he can't, no one else is joining him, he can't really figure it out, but maybe there's another guy on the other side of the room who's also in the same situation, and all you need is for those guys to connect, right? So it gives me an opportunity to do that, right? And then at the end of the day, again, that idea that I try and keep the forefront is how am I going to give the most people the most memorable experience? Mm-hmm. And in a room like that, like in Sacramento, there are 800 people in that room, right? And so if all I do is I run in, if I'm in the pit, just trying to get the pit going the whole time, I'm really giving a really great experience to, you know, maybe the smallest amount of people. So what I'm trying to learn on a run like this is how to balance it all, how to, you know, how to do what when. And it is not a science. It's not, I mean, maybe it's a science, but it's more like an art, I think, really.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I can tell you how to do it.
In Defense of Ska will return in a moment. So the other thing that I feel like has become part of your role is hyping the band beyond just during the performance. You've been flyering the shows, and running the TikTok. So let's hear a little bit about flyering, because I think that's a lost art form.
Amen, brother. I think flyering is the most important underutilized tool that you can do, and all of us have something to flyer.
Yeah,
right. If you're in a band and you're not flyering, what are you doing? I've been flyering since I was in high school. I started booking shows when I was 15 years old. And that was before I was like, there was MySpace to let people know about shows. So the way you learned about shows was someone would give you a flyer at a show. So you had to find a show, and then you had to find a flyer to go to another one. And that's how it worked for a long time. And then social media came and there's a lot more access to it online. But yeah, we've definitely gotten away from that flyering. Flyering is so effective. It, even if someone doesn't go to the show, it puts one, you can't click away from it, right? You have to look at it.
Yeah.
Most people, they put it in their pocket or they keep it. There are like some people are cynical and they say, well, everyone just throws it out. I was flying at the 930 club the other day. I gave out 500 flyers and I went to the garbage can afterwards because somebody said that to me. You know, I know how many were in that garbage can? Like 20.
Mm-hmm.
Like out of 500.
Yeah.
So over, and if you, you know, kind of say some people use a different garbage can, okay. Still over 90% of the people walked away with a flyer for the Killing Eve show at the 930 club in their pocket. That show isn't happening for weeks. So they're going to be thinking about it for weeks. Maybe it sits in their car. But that kind of advertising that is strong, I think it's just as strong as word of mouth. And I think it's a million billion times stronger than social media, which has no, you know, not no personal attachment to it, but it's, there's no analog, right? It's all through the screen on social media, which is fine. But, you know, when you meet a guy who plays in the band and he's giving you the flyer at another show, it's a different experience. And I also think it shows, you know, how bad we want people to come to our shows.
Yeah.
Right. We put everything we have into our sets, and to have, you know, for example, this like 930 club gig that we're going to do November 21st. That's something that we're going to, you know, blow the roof off of. So we want to make sure that we tell everybody we possibly can about it. So where do you find those people? Well, you go out to the club at, you know, 9, 10, 11 o'clock at night, and you stand outside when people leave and hand out your flyers.
Yeah. So the 930 club gig, is the 930 club a spot that you grew up going to shows at?
Kind of, not really. I grew up in New Jersey mostly. So I grew up going to shows like Bloomfield Ave Cafe, Hamilton Street, like Starling and Ballroom, the PLP Log Cabin, you know, different DIY venues, the Westfield First Baptist Church. But I went to school down in D.C. and went to the 930 Club of March. Mike and I once saw the Andrew WK tour come through there when he was doing the first album in full. It was wonderful. But the 930 Club is, I mean, it's an incredible venue. It's, you know, storied. It's, you know, a real part of D.C. where I've spent a lot of time in my life. And the band has had, you know, so many incredible nights. So it's an honor to be able to headline there. We're going to, I mean, we have such a great show planned. I can't wait.
So you were booking shows as a kid. What were those first shows that you were booking?
The first show I booked was probably, I think it was like three local ska. It was two local ska bands, one pop punk band, and some guy with a guitar. And I booked it in the basement of a church in my town. I didn't go to the church, but I heard that they used to throw shows there. Somebody said that Big Wick had played and Catch 22 had played. So I just went there and asked if they would let me do it. And they gave me a shot. It worked well. And, you know, everyone made money, including the church. So they were really happy and let me keep doing it for a couple of years.
Do you remember the names of those bands?
Yeah, I booked Westbound Train. I booked Awful Waffle, which was, you know, if you're from New Jersey, you know who that band is. I booked the New York Ska Jazz Ensemble, Hamilton Street, The Know How, Bigger Thomas, Hub City Stompers, Bombtown, Too Short Notice, The Miasmics. So, you know, a lot of New Jersey, you know, what they call the dark ages of ska, right? Early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
I got into ska, like I said, my first show was in 2003. My first show was ASOB, The Arrogant Sons of Bitches, Big D and the Kids Table, two New Jersey ska bands, Too Short Notice and The Miasmics. And then Mike Sosinski's high school band opened that show. That's where I met Mike.
Their name was?
Jade Fire. And we met that night, and I ended up booking his band later on. Of course, yeah, I can't believe I didn't mention them. And that's how, you know, we kind of, you know, became closer friends. And then we both were in D.C. later on when he started Kill Lincoln.
When did you guys realize you had the same birthday?
In high school.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we threw two birthday shows in high school.
Yeah.
Oh, I threw them. I booked him. I booked Jay Byer on them.
So what grade was that?
My 16th birthday, maybe, or 17th birthday. And then another one. But there was actually a gas leak at the venue. And that one, so that one didn't actually happen. That was a bummer. There was the Flaming Tsunamis were on it. It was a really good show. Didn't happen.
The show didn't get moved somewhere else?
It happened in March, a couple of months later. I don't think Mike Band ended up playing, though, actually. So it was, you know.
Okay.
It's hard to do a birthday show delayed. It doesn't really work.
Yeah. Yeah. It kind of takes the wind out of the sails. How many of these birthday shows have you guys done?
I think four now.
Okay.
Because we did the one that happened. We did the one that had the gas leak. We did the one in Essex at Hawks Pleasure Club, which was like, you know, super DIY. And then we did the Black Hat one this past year.
Was the Hawks one the show where you jumped out of a box?
Yeah, that was the first time I did that. And then we did that again. We did that again this year. It was a good bit, you know?
Yeah. How does the crowd react to Drew jumping out of a box?
Oh, well, you know, we're starting the set. So, of course, they're excited no matter what, right? We're just walking out on stage and they're excited. So jumping out of a box, it just makes it a little bit more fun, a little bit different. Right? Like I said, trying to make the show memorable, right? Because I see the same band night after night.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? It's Kill Lincoln. I'm always seeing Kill Lincoln. On this last tour, somebody said she'd seen us six times. Right? Six times. And Kill Lincoln, we'll switch up the set and everything, but we still, like, what can we do to make it different? What can we do to keep it interesting? Right? What can we do to make this one a special occasion? Right? And so the birthday show, I think, is a good example of, like, how we do that.
What exactly is the box bit? Does someone bring a box on stage and then you jump out of it?
Yeah, so, like, there's no, like, the house goes dark. They scuffle me out onto this box, and I'm in the box. It's wrapped like a big present with, like, a bow on top and everything. And then we play the intro music, this birthday song. I think it's Ariana Grande. And then I pop out of the box and we start the set. Everybody comes out and we go.
Are you in, like, a Chippendales kind of outfit?
No, I'm just wearing my, you know, show clothes.
You know what the next level of this is, though, right, Drew?
No, what?
You got to jump out of a cake.
I know. Well, there's a backlog of things I got to do, for sure.
Let's put the cake on the list.
The cake is on there. I think we tried to do a cake for this one, and we couldn't figure it out, so we just did the box again, the gift, the birthday present.
I know a guy. I could probably help you with the cake thing.
I know a guy.
Okay, so another thing I've noticed when we've toured together, you're on stage during soundcheck.
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing on stage during soundcheck as a hype man?
I'm always wondering that myself. No, I'm always wondering what am I doing in any given moment, right?
Okay.
But during soundcheck, I'm, you know, just trying to, you know, one, figure out where am I going to be, right? You know, if a crowd shows up and I should be on stage, where would I be, right? And even if it's a smaller crowd these days, I try and at least start the set from the stage so people kind of know I'm in on the bit.
Yeah.
Because a lot enough people know, and that's just something I try and do. I think it's more fun that way. People know, hey, this, like, he's part of it.
Yeah.
You're not just some guy dancing.
Yes.
Exactly. So, but then, yeah, I am, though, still, too.
But you traveled all this way.
Yeah, I am just some guy dancing, but I came here from Baltimore. So during soundcheck, yeah. So where am I going to be? Like, is there room behind Mike? Is there room in between Mike and Food? Is there room, like, space just between Tyler and the guitar amp? Is there room behind CJ, to the side of CJ? Where are the lights? Is there going to be a barrier? Can I reach the barrier? Can I jump up from the ground onto the stage? Is there things to jump off of? Where is Ume going to go? How is Ume going to get back on stage? You know, things like that.
Is Ume's, like, when he goes into the crowd, is that kind of planned? Because at Sacramento, it seemed like you almost like set aside a moment and you went with him and were almost like strategic, like, let's get him up on this back part and then let's have him jump from the bar into the crowd.
In Sacramento, yeah. I'm trying to remember where he was in Sacramento.
There was a thing in the back where people are kind of watching from the I don't know if I'd call it a balcony, but like up high.
We never know what Ume is going to do, right? However, we're always on, we always keep an eye out for him. We rely on the safety crew, you know, primarily to keep Ume safe, but I do what I can to be a part of them and support Ume. But, yeah, I mean, we don't know where he's going to go, but typically he jumps off something pretty cool. So it's one of the things I think about during soundcheck is like, hey, if this crowd goes off, you know, what are people going to jump off of? Right. It's cool when people jump off of things.
Yeah.
You know, it's cool when people jump off of speakers. It's cool when people jump off stages and balconies and barriers. That stuff's pretty cool.
Let's take a quick moment to speak about stage diving etiquette.
Yes.
What's the correct way to jump off a stage as an audience member?
I think the most important thing is probably reading the room.
Yeah.
There were shows on this Lesson J tour where I did not stage dive, which is not, you know, typically if it's like a Kill Lincoln gig, you know, there's people in the air a lot. There were some shows on this one where it didn't seem like it, right? There might have been like some people on the barrier that like maybe they wouldn't be able to handle me, you know, or handle someone, or I was just worried about them. So you got to read the room, first off. And then two is, I would say you just got to go for it.
Yeah.
Right? So one, make sure you're not going to, like, you know, hurt somebody, like hurt like an old person or a child, right? Or, you know, somebody that, you know, really, you don't want to hurt, you don't want to seriously hurt anyone, right? How do you stage dive? You jump off stage. That's how you do it. I think here's the thing. Okay. I would say when you stage dive, you also want to get to the ground as safely as possible. Basically, you want to make it to the ground and get back up, right? That's your goal when you stage dive, is to jump off the stage and then walk and get back on the ground. I think so. A lot of times what people do is they stage dive and then they get lost in their crowds and they're like, all right, what do I do? What do I do? No, just get on the ground. You know, get back on the ground.
Yeah, to me, it feels like actually the biggest faux pas when it comes to stage diving is people who get on stage and then they're on stage too long and they're trying to do stuff on stage or get selfies or interact some way. Like, it feels like you're supposed to get off the stage quickly to do the dive. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think it's all about, I mean, in like you want to, you're making a moment, mm-hmm. right? And a lot of times when people are stage diving, they're doing it like a cool moment during a song, right? And so you're doing it during that moment, or you run up on stage and you do like the Suicide Machines. They were playing this song and it had this great two-step part in Philadelphia, and so, you know, Mike and I, we both had run on the stage and we're two-stepping across it, and then we're right back off of it, you know, 10 seconds later, because that part's over, right? You do it and then you go. So whether you're, you know, just running on stage and then running off to the other side, you're stage diving, you're crowd surfing, you're on there, or you're just running up and you're singing a gang vocal, just do it and then go, and then, you know, do something else. But yeah, keep it going. It's that stuff's fun.
We'll be right back after this.
I want to switch gears a little bit. I want to talk about the tour dynamic. I feel like Kill Lincoln is a band that like vibes together really well on tour. Tell me a little bit about what it's like being in the van in Kill Lincoln.
I'm very fortunate to be in a band where we're all friends. Yeah. I know that that is it seems like an exception more than the rule for sure. And to to tour together, I can't imagine doing it otherwise. I really could not imagine doing it if we weren't all friends with each other and cool with each other. But no, we really love each other. We have family meal every day. We all meet at the coffee shop in the morning, and we're all working on our little projects together.
You guys dine together every day on tour.
Yeah. Yeah.
Every meal or just one meal a day?
One meal. We have one family meal every day.
That to me seems like wild.
I don't know, man. We love each other. I don't know. That's where we kind of catch up on stuff. We talk, get ready for the show, and then we try and eat, kind of like ideally, 5 to 6 hours at least before the set. We have pretty energetic sets, so you don't want a lot of food in your stomach at that point, throwing it around. So we'll get to the venue. I typically try and find what's on Google Maps. I read the recent reviews. We make a decision. And then we go there and have our little family meal and then go back to the show.
So are you the one spearheading like the location for where you guys are eating?
I do a lot of scoping out.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'd heard a little bit. Cause, I know most bands will just go to Taco Bell or something, my band included. But you guys always seem to go to like interesting places in whatever city we're in.
Yeah. Well, we have a lot of time before we get to the city.
Yeah.
So one of our band activities is I read the reviews on Google Maps of like the venue, the restaurants nearby, and a lot of them are really funny.
Yeah.
Like especially when you read like what people are upset about, and you learn certain things to look out for and different trends. Venues, for example, venues are skewed bad because their negative ratings are somebody who's like too drunk and got thrown out.
Yeah.
So there's different things you see on there, but yeah, that's. We have some time in the van, typically 3 to 7 hours, to look around the neighborhood and decide what we're gonna do.
That's right.
And then besides that, we talk about the Doghouse movies on this last tour. I don't know if you guys have ever seen those.
Tell us about the Doghouse movies.
Well, there's 5 Doghouse films in the franchise total. We really focused on Doghouse 2, Battle of the Barks, most commonly. That's the one where J.K. Simmons reprises his role as Fletcher, tries to get the dogs to start a band together.
What's the band going to be called?
Oh, I can't recall that right now. but it drives JTT nuts. It's crazy. We recall the scene where this guy Drifter, he's like half human, half dog. He's like speeding away from the venue after loadouts.
I don't even know, what are these movies? Are they?
Yeah. What is Doghouse? So it's just like a movie that we made up.
Yeah, Brent told me I needed to ask about the Doghouse movie. So
yeah, so Doghouse. Yeah, so what do we do on tour?
So I can't watch these. You're telling me I can't watch these movies?
Not yet. We're working on them. So Doghouse is a set of films that we're working on.
Okay,
they're not out there yet, but we're working on a cast. Just cut this part out of the interview.
No, this part stays in.
So you're looking for cast.
Yeah, we've got Mike Myers as Austin Powers playing Drifter, JTT, Jonathan Taylor Thomas playing himself.
I love it.
I know that I can't compete with them for the leads, but if you have any for extras or maybe like one or two lines, I'm just throwing my hat in the ring.
Yeah, man with gun.
Here's what I'll tell you about Doghouse. All right, I would say when you ask like what do I do as a hype man. I try to make sure everyone has a good experience, right? Including my best friends on tour, Kill Lincoln. And sometimes that means goofing around about a fake movie called Doghouse for hours and hours on end. Doghouse is just a stupid idea that we had. And then I just kept egging it on and egging it on and egging it on. And now we have 5 films and a whole PDF Bible about what's going on with the Doghouse productions.
There's a PDF Bible.
Yeah, I'll share it with you later.
Okay, I'm going to need to see that.
It's got several scenes.
I want to circle back a little bit. I heard the story recently on another podcast, but I'd like you to get into it a little bit more. You joining Kill Lincoln. I'd heard that you went on, you were invited on a weekender with them. You were already kind of friends. Go from there.
Yeah. So like I said, I knew Mike from New Jersey. I knew Tyler because we used to post together on a Scott message board. And then, so I would see them, you know, in their early days, you know, here and there. And then I saw, you know, kept seeing them when I moved to Baltimore in 2010, which is probably about 3 years into Kill Lincoln, maybe, I think, 3 or 4 years. And then they had a weekend coming up, and Mike asked if I wanted to go along with them. And so I did. And I just, you know, had fun. And, you know, I was probably 22, 23 years old, just had a blast. You know, you're going on tour with a band for the first, you know, one of the first times. I hadn't done, you know, I toured like 2 weekends, short things in high school with bands, nothing major, nothing crazy. So going out and doing this was a lot of fun.
Well, sidebar really quick. I heard the first tour you ever did was with a band called The Mafia.
Yes, that's true.
Ska?
It was a ska band, yeah, from my hometown. And they're pretty good. I didn't have an official role in that band. I mean, I guess I was a hype man unofficially. I never had a title or anything, and they didn't last, you know, very long at all, unfortunately. But yeah, I you know, booked that band a lot in high school.
Okay.
So I went on that tour. The last it was like, you know, 5 shows, not like a Baltimore, Connecticut, Brooklyn, Atlantic City, and then the South Jersey DIY venue. And at the South Jersey one, it was the last show, like a Sunday night, and they wouldn't let me in without paying because I said I wasn't in the band. And they were saying, Mike was in the whole band saying, no, he's in the band, he's okay. Or like, he's, you know, he's just with us, right? And she said, well, no, I went on the Facebook page and he's not listed, so he's got to pay like $5 or whatever it was. And so Mike went ahead and updated the Facebook page to add me as a band member. And then I, you know, I would say for a couple of years that I loved seeing Kill Lincoln, right? As a fan, I'm a fan of Kill Lincoln, and I was back then. Otherwise, I wouldn't have gone and seen them so all the time. So I had fun going and seeing them, and I would do that, but not necessarily every single show. You know, I would say there's a couple of years where maybe I didn't really feel like the responsibility necessarily of it or the commitment of it. And then maybe I'm not sure exactly when, but I kind of realized, oh hey, I'm doing something here, I better, you know, do a good job at it. And then it was probably, and especially when they gave me credits on the album, you know, when you're listed on the record, you're like, oh crap, I gotta do a good job here, right? Yeah. And I think I also kind of realized okay, so going back to the history of Hype Man, right? I don't know anything about the history of Hype Man, right? And if I'm learning about it and I don't know anything, how am I going to expect somebody else to be able to understand this, right? So what I kind of thought was, I either have to be all in or just like not really kind of do this, because it's kind of weird if you see a band and sometimes they have a guy that's just there dancing and sometimes there's not. I felt like it has to either be part of the band or not. And probably, you know, and that's when I was like, okay, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. And so that's when I was like, I can't, like, you know, miss shows. I got to be at rehearsals. I got to be at soundcheck. If I'm in it, like I'm in it. Right. Especially when we're doing these long tours, when we're going to Japan, when we're going to, I mean, Kill Lincoln, we do a lot of, you know, serious stuff for, you know, guys who don't get a paycheck from it and, you know, have really, you know, have a lot to balance. And if we're not all in, every single one of us, it would never work, right? Including me. So in terms of kind of the history of it and you know, my role, it's ever changing what I'm doing, right? Whether I'm on stage or I'm in the crowd, I'm on TikTok or I'm flyering, right? I'm always just trying to do the same thing, is make sure everybody has a great experience and they know about this awesome band that they can go see and have a good time with.
So you have credits on the albums. Are you on the albums?
In gang vocals mostly, and I have a solo on the new record.
Oh. Solo as in vocal solo?
You gotta check it out. No Normal, out now on Bad Time Records. BillLincoln.com.
So you do gang vocals. Why have you ever been given a microphone on stage?
No, I only take them.
You are allowed to take them. The band doesn't have a rule against you getting on a mic.
I take them a lot less than I used to.
Oh yeah,
because I used to always take the wrong ones too. Like I'd take a horn mic and give it to the crowd. I think crowd vocals and gang vocals are a lot of fun. I think pylons are a lot of fun. I think jumping on stage and singing a part like this gang vocal is really fun, and it's all part of that fun live show experience.
Yeah.
A lot of times I'll just take a microphone and give it to the crowd. I always hope that whatever people see me do, they know that they can do it too, right? Yeah. Like that's part of the reason. Like if no one's dancing, right? And some guy's dancing, that means you can dance too, right? But the same goes for everything else, right? If some guy, jumps up and screams into the mic, well, you do it too, right? Have fun, be a part of the experience. I don't really need a mic, and we need like less things on stage, right? More like rather than more, right? We're already a ska band, so there's a bunch of us. And then you got a guy who doesn't even play an instrument dancing around causing ruckus. So at one point we had a hype mic on the stage plot, just so, like I kind of had a place to go more so than anything. But I don't think it works for what I do. I don't like it. To me, it's just another barrier between us and the crowd.
All right.
Maybe like a dummy mic would be nice. One that's not even really plugged in, but I can just kind of like grab it and use it when I feel like it and just throw it out there.
Yeah. I like that idea.
Well, like, so with Madness, they had kind of a similar thing. Like they had Chaz who was danced, but he did kind of hype. Like he did the intro to One Step Beyond, but you don't really do that. You don't go up and be like,
No Normal.
No Normal.
I'm figuring out what I'm doing every day, just like the rest of us.
One thing I'd like to recognize really quickly is you stopped drinking recently.
Yeah, 10 months ago.
Yeah,
temporarily though.
Yeah, yeah. How's that? How's that going?
I unfortunately have to say I look and feel great. I did it because I did a lot of sobriety stints last year when we did the New Tone tour, just because, I have a regular job that I need to pay my bills and, support my life, and, working that and then trying to, juggle it from the road and then also doing the tour. I was like, I can't do this and then also drink, because, the drinking, it kills your sleep. Even if you have like two or three drinks on a night, like, you might as well not be getting sleep that night, the way your body works. It's awful. So then at the end of the year, I was just like, man, I'm so busy. I'm just going to cut it out for a whole year and see if that really helps, like, just keep me on track. And because like killing and we had enough, I mean, we're very busy, right?
Yeah.
And, I have a bit, busy life outside of Kill Lincoln as well. So I just decided to give not drinking for a year a try. And like I said, unfortunately, I feel great. I am very productive. I sleep great. It makes pouring a hell of a lot easier. I think it's important also as like, I think it, as someone who, grew up in like a punk scene and who is involved with, punks, I think it's also what you realize also is just what this outsized influence alcohol has on our culture and kind of how messed up that is. And for especially like the punk rock world, how it's such a big part of it, but it's this thing that really doesn't benefit us much at all. It's like, unfortunately, people have serious problems with it. Unfortunately, it's in a lot of ways, it's a waste of money. It's, I think alcohol is fine. I'm somebody who's going to drink again. I'm not like swearing off alcohol forever, but not drinking for a year has made me realize how ubiquitous it is, right? And how often I don't need to drink. Which, in the past, like when I would tour, I'd probably, have, you'd be drinking 70-80% of the nights, right? And not, you know, drinking to excess, but maybe having, you know, a couple beers over the course of a night. You know, in the future, maybe I'm drinking, like, you know, at the end of the tour to celebrate, a drink or two. I'm not sure. But it is an interesting perspective that it's given me on a whole lot.
Not to inflate Adam's ego too much, but it really is like counterculture. It is truly counterculture to not drink. Like, it is, like you're saying, is so ingrained in all aspects of culture. Like, not drinking is like one of the most punk things you can do.
It's crazy. You know, where I live in Baltimore, you go to a baseball game at Camden Yards, you can't buy non-alcoholic beer.
Mm-hmm.
You can buy like 20 different beers, right? And they stop selling it during the seventh inning because they don't want you to get too drunk. But the one thing that they won't serve you is beer without alcohol. Isn't that crazy?
It stinks.
I love non-alcoholic beer.
Yeah. I can never get into non-alcoholic beer.
Well, I think you have to like beer first.
Probably. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's probably a part of it.
I'll happily crush them with you next time I see you.
Oh, yeah. Let's split a pack of O'Doul's. Let's go. What's a good non-alcoholic beer? I don't even know.
I mean, the popular ones are the Athletics. Those are good. The Golden Dawn is kind of like the standard, I think.
Okay.
But Hop Water is a really popular one. That's one that we really like in Kill Lincoln.
It's like a beer LaCroix.
Yeah, it is. It's good.
Yeah. It keeps you hydrated too. All right. One last thing for the main episode. Let's talk a little bit about Urban Crater.
Okay.
So you have a record out.
Yes.
You play guitar and do some singing in this band, right?
Backup vocals or gang vocals.
Gang vocals.
Not even backup. Gang vocals.
And then this is so you put out an album called Leftover Pizza.
P-I-Z-Z, don't forget the A. I go pretty much eat it every single day. So many times for me to choose. If you don't like it, then I don't like you.
And then there's been a single every year since this 2020 release related to Christmas.
Straight Edge Christmas. Straight Edge Christmas. Straight Edge Christmas. Straight Edge Christmas.
What's the deal with that?
So Urban Crater is a band I play guitar in. It started out of my buddy Josh Douglas had a solo project here in Baltimore. He's one of my best friends, and he had a solo act called Josh D's So-Called Solo Act, where he would play acoustic guitar and sing these punk songs and a lot of songs about pizza. And then when Kill Lincoln kind of took a break for a little bit, when Mike moved to California, he asked if I wanted to play guitar in this band, but he was going to try and do a full band for his act, and that's why I wanted to play guitar. So I started doing that, and it was a lot of fun. And we put out that album. I, you know, Josh writes all the songs, I played guitar, and yeah, we have a Christmas show every year where we play some Christmas songs. I think at this point we have enough to do a whole Christmas set. We only do them once a year, and I don't really know why we do it. I think we all just we like Christmas. Well, one year, I used to live in this neighborhood in Baltimore called Hamden one year, and I threw a big Christmas keg party where we went Christmas caroling and then had like a show in the basement. And that was Josh Douglas's first. He said that was the first party he ever went to. So like one of the Christmas songs is kind of about that, like his like, you know, Christmas caroling around Baltimore. He's also, Josh is also straight edge. So it's kind of a straight edge ska band, I guess, kind of. I'm California straight edge.
Yeah.
And yeah, we have two new Christmas songs this year, and then we have a new album coming out next. I think in the next couple of months or, you know, sometime soon. But yeah, you know, it's a fun band I play guitar in, and Eddie from the Skluts, who's playing Fest and 13, just the Skluts, and then Mitch from Braceface, who's on Uncle Style, they play in the band as well. And yeah, we have fun.
Nice.
Do you have a hype man for that band?
No, unfortunately not. You know what a lot of people have been saying? A lot of people at these shows, they say, I want your job. Okay, go start a band. You know? Who's to say a hype man can't start a band?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I said, go put your ad up on Craigslist, starting a band. Searching for guitarist, singer, drummer, and bass.
Thank you for listening to In Defense of Ska. To support the show, sign up for our Patreon. Intro and outro music by Slow Gherkin from the EP Lives. Additional music by Dan P. and the Bricks. Please rate and review the podcast and tell a friend. Follow at In Defense of Ska on social media. The book In Defense of Ska by Aaron Carnes is available from Clash Books. Order it online. Chris Reeves of SPI is our editor. This is your co-host, Adam Davis of Omnigon, leaving you by saying ska now more than ever.
Alrighty, dear listener, that is the episode.
I don't feel hosting.
Yeah, it's just the beginning. Everything you could ever want to be discussed is discussed in the remainder of the episode. Right, Adam?
Yeah, yeah. But how did I do?
Oh, so good. We're gonna critique your hosting capabilities in the Patreon.
Second time hosting.
I will discuss it with Adam in more detail, how I think he did as a host.
He's going to give me my performance review.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be harsh.
Do you want to hear some spicy content? You want to hear me cry? Sign up with a Patreon. $5. You're a grown man, cry.
Taxes was feeling so stuck. Sitting in traffic, squeezing into a parking spot, all to squeeze in getting tax help during your lunch break. Now Taxes is a TurboTax expert who does your taxes for you, while you go about your day getting real-time notifications about their progress and the most money back guaranteed. Now this is Taxes, Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Live Full Service, real-time updates only in iOS mobile apps. See guaranteed details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.